everybody. Welcome in to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You can also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you haven't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your Twitter is very much appreciated as always. And we're joining you guys the morning after the NBA draft. I know maybe some were asking where we were last night, but we were a little disappointed that you guys were as well. The Suns fell, unfortunately, from the number three spot originally with 19 wins all the way down to the sixth spot, which we kind of were talking about, Brent, this scenario. I know it had the highest probability of happening with over 25%, but is this kind of a doomsday scenario for the Suns here? I know there's some guys on the board that we like personally, but I just don't see how you can sell, if you're James Jones, Jeff Bauer, and co, how you can sell a fan base a sixth overall pick, like a role. How you can maybe draft a Darius Garland or Brandon Clark, so to say, and sell it to the fan base when you lost, once again, more than 60 games this year.
It's incredibly tough from that perspective. I think the way that it played out, probably the NBA will be happy with, but of course that doesn't really satisfy any Suns fans, and I think that's exactly right. It's really tough, and this is the rub of tanking, and I don't even think this team was tanking this year, but it's the problem with intentionally setting up your roster to not be at its maximum competitiveness, which is sometimes the lottery doesn't go your way. I mean, Suns fans don't need any reminder of that, but this one, I think, I mean, obviously was the lowest from one position to the next that the team has ever fallen. And definitely with a draft that is so thin and obviously the top prize being such a head above everyone else, it has to hurt a little bit more. But do you think, I mean, forgetting number one, but just thinking that the Suns fell out of the two and three slots where they were going to be able to, if not take a player, at least be in the mix for having a top asset with kind of a three-person draft. Do you think this one hurts more than 2017 when they wanted Lonzo and fell to four and ended up taking Josh Jackson?
I think so. If we look back in hindsight now, I feel like it's kind of similar. But at the time, I think we were all in agreement that Josh Jackson was a top two, top three prospect, and they wanted to slip to the board number four. So I think this is a lot worse than 2017 because you just think about this, Brent. I mean, if they're actually going to try to trade this pick, what can you get for the sixth pick in this draft? If it's a Darius Garland or let's say DeAndre Hunter, for example, Brandon Clark, who's going to want that? I mean, maybe Orlando with a guy like Aaron Gordon, maybe Mike Conley if they get Ja Morant. But the options now, all of a sudden, Drew Holiday's not leaving anymore. They just got Zion Williamson. There's no way he's leaving. So now all of a sudden, these options, and with the pick decreasing in value now, their options are really slim if you want to trade this pick.
Yeah, I definitely want to circle back, and I think we will at the end, to kind of what they can do here, because there are, I think, more options that they're going to probably try to consider now based on the fact that they fell. And that we talked a lot about the pick being up in the air for a trade. I think that's even more likely now. But what was your reaction when you saw, I forget the last segment where they unveiled the top four, but when you see Memphis, New Orleans, and LA all jump and you're just counting in, it was almost tough to keep track because I'm not used to this system yet. But what are you thinking as these teams are completely jumbled going through from 14 to 1?
What's crazy for me is because usually the lottery, it doesn't start until like quarter to six, or like Arizona time, quarter to nine Eastern time. And yeah, so I turn on the TV about two picks in already. And then right when I turn TV on, the Lakers are jumping. I'm like, what in the world is going on? And the Pelicans do it and the Grizzlies do it. It kind of speaks to the lottery system where you see now all those teams who jumped had at least 30 wins. Is that the sweet spot now if you're a lottery team that, really, the NBA did a great job now, in my opinion, where I think tanking is not going to be really de-incentivized, where these teams, if you want to get maybe a Zion Williamson, you might have to actually be a 31 team.
Well, I mean, obviously, the most likely is still the top, but I think, you know, one thing that I saw on Twitter that I think alludes to what you're talking about is just that the back end, and it's something people talked about at the time, but I think we kind of just forgot about it. The back end teams, they have more of a chance than they ever did. So I think it was like somebody was using the Lakers as an example, sitting LeBron and getting, they were around, you know, 13, 14, you know, at when he first came back from injury, they still were in the playoff chase. But when he, even when he was still playing and they were out of it, they were just near the back half of the lottery. They get all the way up to 11, and in years past, they would have had a microscopic chance, like 1% or less to leap up to number one. And this year, it was like 4.5%. Obviously, they don't get all the way to one, but the odds for them jumping to every 1-4 pick was higher. So I think we will see some of that more consistently. And I think looking forward to the next time they change this up, that might be one of the things that they look at, because I think rewarding teams who were on the brink of the playoffs and just completely shut it down, especially with knowing those teams are tend to be pretty good, pretty competitive, I think that's pretty bad too. You know, it's ugly to see the Cavs and the Suns and the Knicks playing G Leaguers in their starting lineup, but it's even worse when somebody like the Lakers is just has a genuine mathematical reason to not play the best player in the NBA for weeks at a time.
Yeah, it's funny how it works, just because you see teams like Memphis and New Orleans who finish in the top two spots. Ironically enough, I'm not going to say it's rigged or anything. I'm just pointing out just Memphis and New Orleans, they were the teams who were always rumored in the possible ability of moving. But now those teams, those fan bases get injected with a Zion Williamson and a Ja Morant. And I think ticket sales for both those franchises are going to skyrocket through the roof now.
RJ, yeah, Ja and Jaren Jackson, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, Ja and Triple J is going to be super fun to watch. And I think we'll get into Conley later, but I think that's going to really have a lot of say with what's going to happen with that team this summer. But when you think about this, Brennan, from the draft point of view, I know we've always said this is a Zion draft. It's really just him, and that's a tier below that, really two tiers below that. But then the Suns aren't going to be looking at that second or third tier now. They're not going to get a Ja Morant. They're not going to get an RJ Barrett, and probably not even a Jarrett Culver. What do you think, just from that scenario there, them falling not only out of the Zion race, but also the Ja Morant derby and also RJ Barrett and maybe even Jarrett Culver? Just seems like we were talking about the doomsday scenario, so to say, with prospects. And I feel like anyone at six there, I mean, we've already mentioned the names, we'll get into more later, but it just seems like those guys are going to be more projects. They're not going to be immediate impact players. And I don't know if the Suns can really afford to do that.
For sure. I mean, maybe we can actually do this where the next segment we can talk about some of the guys that they could look at, and then the third segment talk about trades, just because, like I said, I think the trade thing just has to be front of mind at this point because of exactly what you're saying. And the Suns have fell so far that I think it's not only you're missing out, as you said, on the top. I really think it's like a one person draft, and then it's like another couple tiers. Like if I was doing tiers, I might have Ja and RJ in the third tier. Like it's kind of like that this year. But they've fallen so far now that they're also having to just pray that some of the secondary guys fall to them. Like it's not even a lock to get the guy out of that cluster from 4 to, you know, 14, basically. Like it's going to be such a eye of the beholder type of situation as the process plays out over the next month or so, that you can't even feel great about getting a guy you like. You know, it's not only the top heavy nature of it, but it's just the fact that usually by this time of year, we have such a clear idea of, okay, Mo Bamba is going to be in the 5 or 6 range. All right, Trae Young's probably going to be somewhere between 2 and 5. You know, and we'll get maybe some of that clarity as these guys meet with their teams. But it does feel very chaotic right now with that lack of a hierarchy that didn't really kind of fall out during the college season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Before we go on to our next segment, though, we're going to go more into the guys who they should look at 6, or in the, like Brinson last time, we're going to go even more into the trade possibilities. But before we go into that, I wanted to actually run through the lottery real quickly. If you guys haven't heard it, the lottery, we'll start off with 14 through 1, just real quick for you guys. Boston via Sacramento, 13 was Miami, 12 Charlotte, 11 was Minnesota, they moved down a slot. Atlanta via Dallas, they moved down a slot because the Pelicans jumped and the Lakers. The Wizards and the next five teams all moved down 3 spots because of what happened in the lottery. The Wizards, the Hawks, the Bulls, the Suns to 6, and the Cavs to 5, Lakers to 4, Knicks moved down 2 spots to 3, and then the Grizzlies and Pelicans jumped 6 spots each to 2 and 1. So as you guys can tell, a new lottery reform made for a lot of craziness last night. Before we go on to our next, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked NBA Twitter account. If you've already done so, go and give us a follow over at Locked NBA Net, especially right now during the playoffs and during the lottery times. It's one of the more busiest times of the year, and we have both of our accounts set up on there for the Locked On Suns coverage you guys love on here. But if you guys want some playoff coverage, you guys want daily coverage of the NBA, go and give us a follow over at Locked On NBA Now.
And quickly want to tell you our show today is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. We all know hiring is challenging, I guess, particularly with the sixth pick. Hiring a new player to lead your franchise is going to be a little bit of a tough thing to go about. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses go to connect with qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter will scan thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience for your job and invite them to apply to it. As those applications start to come in, ZipRecruiter is going to analyze each of them, spotlight the top candidates, and make sure you never miss the perfect match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on the site get a quality candidate within one day. Right now, our listeners here at Locked On Suns can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. That is ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON, the name of our network, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right. I think you're writing about this today at Bright Side of the Sun, kind of the guys that we suddenly have to start paying a lot more attention to than we really ever expected here at number 6. But I think it does bear mentioning that this draft really is like a complete scramble, in my opinion, from 4 all the way through. And people have been saying 14, and I get it, that's just where the lottery ends. But I really feel like there's guys that I'm not even sure where they fall. Somebody like Kevin Porter, Tyler Hero, PJ Washington, Bol Bol, Rui Hachimura. There's guys that I've seen mocked from 15 to 20 who I feel like could still hop into the lottery. So yeah. So who are the guys you're looking at right now? I mean, I don't think we have to look that low necessarily, but it does just kind of show how crazy it is at this point.
Yeah, I think there's 5 names. I'm going to write this on, like you said, on Bright Side today. I think there's 5 names that fans should really be focused in on. In no particular order, by the way. I'm going to start off with Darius Garland, the point guard of Vanderbilt, who we'll get into in a few minutes. I think he has the most upside of anyone I'm going to list here because he played only 5 games at Vanderbilt, but he showed a lot of good stuff at Vanderbilt. If he can play alongside Devin Booker is a question, but there's a lot of upside there with Darius Garland. Kobe White from North Carolina, another point guard there. I think he's more in the 8 to 10 range. I think Garland's more along the lines of 6 to 8 range, but those guys are going to be really close in a lot of draft circles. Also, we have the 2 wings. We have DeAndre Hunter of Virginia, who's going to be right in that 5-6 range, and Jarrett Culver of Texas Tech, who's going to be in that 4-6 range, in my opinion. Then we also have Brandon Clark of Gonzaga, who I talked about a little bit on the Locked On show with Greg Moore and Dana Scott last week, or a few weeks ago, because when you think more about it, the most immediate need for this team, I think, outside of point guard is power forward. Brandon Clark is already 23 years old. He's a hometown kid for Phoenix. Fits well defensively next to DeAndre Ayton, but can you sell your fan base is the question on a 23-year-old power forward who really is a 0 offensively at the moment. I know he's flashed a little bit there, but he's going to be really raw on the end. He's very good defensively. But the main point I'm trying to make here, Brent, is that all 5 of these guys have a lot of flaws, and really it's a no-shirt thing.
Yeah, let's focus in on a few of those. So I mean, it seems like Darius Garland, despite not playing basketball since the fall, has crept up draft boards, and I'm not sure really why. I mean, obviously very talented. People compare him to Damian Lillard. Actually, I like Kyrie Irving more as a comp. Obviously, that's both of those guys are ceiling level outcomes. That's not what you're saying you're going to get from him. But ESPN yesterday, their you know, immediate reaction mock draft had Garland going in the top 5, and they've kind of been on that for a while. So I wonder if he even gets there. And I actually think I like Kobe White a little bit more as a fit. Now, I agree, just from a value standpoint, 6 does seem high, but I think this is going to be a draft where you just have to go get your guy. So I want to ask you what you think of Kobe White a little more in depth, and then also the likelihood that you think Culver is there, because I really feel like he doesn't get past Cleveland.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll start with Kobe White there, because I feel like if we're talking more about a facilitator and a playmaker, I feel like White checks that box a little bit harder than Garland does. I think Garland's more of a pure scorer than he is, like a, so to say, a facilitator. Kobe White can kind of do a little bit both. he can score a little bit less than Garland, I think, at his rate, but the facilitating, I think he makes up for. I think those guys, honestly, I want to get your opinion as well on these two guys, Barron, because I think if they end up keeping this pick, it might be a debate between Coby White and Darius Garland for the next 6 weeks on my podcast. What do you think about these guys head-to-head? Because I think the more I think about Garland's a better scorer, but White makes up for it with his facilitating, it's probably pretty close.
Yeah, White's, I think for Phoenix, White is a pretty significant step ahead for me. And I've kind of felt that way for a little while. I wrote a couple, maybe right around the end of the college season, if I remember correctly, kind of saying, like, for fans worried about missing out on John Morant or kind of thinking about the other options, like, these two guys are, might even be a better fit potentially, or, you know, they're definitely not a step below Morant in any sizable way to me. And I think that also speaks to me being a little lower on Morant than most people, but White especially, I think he's a guy I was looking at all throughout the season, watching college games. And obviously North Carolina's on all the time and they had a bunch of guys to keep an eye on. And I just remember thinking all throughout the season, like, this guy looks exactly like not only what every team is kind of looking for, but specifically what the Suns need, a big, kind of versatile multi-position defender, kind of at best, you hope he can get there. Guy who can knock down shots from all over the court, excellent in transition. Not an amazing passer, but he's going to be able to make simple plays. He's going to be able to, you know, run the offense for stretches. So I really like him.
Yeah, I really think that White, if he's there on the board, makes sense. But I feel like just at six, like you said, though, it's just hard to say because this is a board where you're going to have to just pick your own guy at six and live with it, even if it is kind of a quote-unquote reach, so to say. But as far as Culver goes, to your point, you're asking about Cleveland, if he makes it past them. The more I've been thinking about it, I think the Lakers or the Knicks, probably not the Knicks, obviously, but I think the Lakers or the Cavs are going to probably take Culver. You're probably right on there. I think the Lakers, if they trade that pick for AD, that's probably going to be a Pelicans pick that gets Jared Culver. But yeah, the more I think about it, I just don't know if Culver gets there. Maybe DeAndre Hunter goes ahead of him, but I can't see that. What do you think about those two wings, Brennan? Because if we're going to talk about another wing, I know Culver's more of a 2-3 and Hunter's more of a 3-4, but if we're not going to talk point guard, I think those two guys are probably BPA at that point.
Yeah, I think I like Hunter better here. I don't think he's the better player. I don't think his ceiling's quite as high. I think that's pretty obvious. We got so much time with both of those guys this spring that really solidified for me. And Culver, especially considering how much better he's gotten, you think about the leap he made. I think that's the kind of guy you want to bet on in a draft like this. You want guys who maybe right now, Garland's along those same lines, you're kind of buying low. It feels weird to say you're buying low on Culver, but if he falls to five and has a chance to be, some people already think he's the second best guy in this class. If you're getting a guy at five, four, five, or six who has that type of upside, that's a huge win. I think Hunter, though, fits a lot of, again, kind of like the difference between Garland and White, not too bad of a consolation prize. I think Hunter checks more of the boxes for specifically what this Suns team needs. I think he's going to be able to play the four right away in the NBA, maybe not be the type of, you know, rebounder and affect the game with his size and athleticism that he was able to do at Virginia. But I think, you know, he has that skill set right away. He's a good interior defender, smart player. You're going to be able to fill that void right away for this team. So I like him. But Clark, I think we should hit on before we go, because I think he's just a guy people have kind of started to notice more as the season's gone along. We had our freak out about him in December at the Trey Colangelo Classic, and I think draft Twitter or just people who like to get into that stuff have noticed him for a while. But it would be completely surprising if he wasn't a top 10 pick at this point. What do you think about his fit with Ayton, just kind of from a pure, you know, 10,000 foot view?
I think it's a little mixed bag. I know a lot of people are very high on Brandon Clark in his fit here. I know Max, who's on the podcast a few times with us at 7 Seconds or Less, he's very high on the possibility of Brandon Clark. He thinks they should take him at six, but
he has him too on his board.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit there, but I think the more.
Hey, Max got Landry Shamet right. So we got it. Maybe we just got to like kind of bow at the altar of Max for a little while, give him his due.
Hey, maybe so. But as far as Clark goes, I feel like defense is the main thing with him. It'd be more of like, I'm not going to call him Draymond-esque, but he kind of has like a light version of him where he can't if he learns how to facilitate and he has the defense he does, the weak side protection he does, the versatility he does, and he can shoot the ball eventually, he's going to be a great player in the NBA. But I just don't know if this team can be willing to take a guy who might possibly be in the NBA close to a zero on offense, because I know he put up a lot of points in the tournament, that one giving you like 35, but that was against an inferior team that doesn't have a lot of NBA athletes on it. So I wanted to get your opinions on if they can really afford to take a guy like a Brandon Clark or even a DeAndre Hunter, for example, maybe even Jared Culver. I mean, all these guys have really questions offensively. Do you think that defense really is, I think defense obviously is a huge need for this team, but do you think it'd be warranted to pick someone like that at six, like Brandon Clark?
I think all those guys would be worth the pick. If they really like those guys and feel like they can build with those guys playing a large role going forward, we're disappointed that it didn't get as high just because these odds are so weird. And we were kind of looking forward to being able to talk about these top group and watch their careers grow. But this is not a thing where these guys are bad, and a sixth pick is still a player you hope to contribute. So if you like them, you should take them. I think Clark specifically, we'll talk plenty about all these guys going forward, but I think he's a guy who fits pretty well. I would be especially excited with him completely differently than Hunter, because I think Clark could play some backup five for you, and that would kind of add another element to this group and continue to grow that flexibility. We talk about it a lot about what they're going to be able to do on the wing with their depth there and Booker playing point guard and all the different ways. We don't really have that. They don't really have that at center in the front court to really play small effectively. You hope Ayton's the kind of guy that can stay on the court in those matchups, but still that creativity is exciting to me. The only problem is I think Clark is small. He's 6'8", 215. He was able to affect the game with his length and athleticism in a way that typically we see it kind of doesn't always translate right away for those types of players. Draymond is such a freak, not only because of how smart he is and all those things. Part of the reason that comp is such a stretch for so many of these guys, as you said, is the guy is big enough to capably play the five. It's really rare to be strong and big enough at 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", to actually do that for long stretches, and he can. And I don't know if Clark will be able to, but if either him or Ayton can shoot from three consistently, that is really something that could be pretty scary. But before we go on here, let's talk about some trades, because as you can tell, these guys are not something that you're going to jump up and down about, and the trade seems ever more likely the more that you kind of try to wrap your mind around it. But before we do that, quickly want to remind you guys, check out our show on the Himalaya Podcast app. Check out Locked On NBA on the Himalaya Podcast app. That is really, I mean, Evan says the Twitter account's invaluable. I agree with him. The show is right up there. I mean, these are the best way. This time of year is insane. It's not really going to slow down until August. If you're an NBA fan, this is what you live for, and you got to be putting everything you can into staying up to date. And I think Locked On NBA does as good a job as anything out there, really, to make sure you have the information, but also kind of tell you what to make of it. So go to Himalaya, check out those shows, check out our show, support them both. And when you get in your car, when you get home, tell that smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. Alrighty, let's go on. What's your favorite trade here? Let's just start it off there. Number six pick, what's the thing you're prioritizing most if you're James Jones right now?
All right, this might sound crazy, but I think I'm going to not go with the point guard here. The more I've been thinking about it, I tweeted this last night on my Twitter account. I kind of like the idea of moving back and getting Aaron Gordon. I think if someone like Darius Garland's on the board at six, or Kobe White and the Magic like them enough and the Suns don't, I could easily see them moving up to get a guy like that and maybe packaging Aaron Gordon and move up 10 spots. Suns move back to 16, get a role player like you said, like a Tyler Hero, for example. Who knows if they even keep that pick? But I think Aaron Gordon, with the things that James Jones talked about the last 3 or 4 months, is about getting guys in the prime of their careers, getting guys who they don't really want to develop much. They want to have win now immediate contributors. And I think Aaron Gordon checks a lot of those boxes. I know it's not a sexy name, it's not a Jimmy Butler thing, but I think trading along the lines of TJ, Josh, and the sixth overall pick for Aaron Gordon, the 16th pick, I feel like makes a lot of sense for both sides.
I think that's definitely it helps. I think he's more reasonable and kind of fits what this team wants to do fit-wise better than TJ does. I don't hate that. I think that they would want to keep that 16th pick. And I think that they would probably be able to find, like I said before, a player that will still help them. Maybe, you know, you're not going to get a guy like Jarrett Culver at that spot. You're not going to get a guy like Brandon Clark, that type of ceiling, but you can get a guy who's going to help you. You might be able to get a guy who's going to play for you even earlier on in his career, potentially. That's kind of where you start to, what you start to think about in that back half of the draft. So I don't hate that at all. I mean, we've been talking about Aaron Gordon since last summer when the Suns reportedly had some interest in him. And I think it's pretty obvious, kind of almost similar to the Indiana situation. Everybody expects them to move one of those centers. I think everybody expects the Orlando front court to shake out a different way going forward because they just have too many guys. And Gordon being a little older, obviously, is the top candidate there. So you combine all those factors, that makes a ton of sense to me. And I don't exactly, the only thing I would say about that one is I'm not exactly sure who they really would want at six. Like, you know, is there a guy there that they really think could help them? They just made the playoffs. Like, unless there's a guy that they're in love with there, I don't necessarily know if that kind of deal would appeal to them, but I definitely think there's something there. The other one, I mean, we probably should talk about is Memphis, which you hinted at before. Not only do the Suns lose value on their pick and want to trade it, the Grizzlies moving up to two means they have their point guard, presumptively, if they were to pick Ja. Even if they pick RJ, that's a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands. So Mike Conley, the already expendable Mike Conley, just kind of maybe sealed his fate out the door. But what kind of trade makes sense to you at that spot between those two squads?
Let me ask you this before I even do that. Do you think number six overall is too rich for Mike Conley? Because I personally think that now with them getting Ja, most likely, I don't even think you need to trade six for him.
I think six is probably higher than I would like to go. But maybe I don't know. I mean, that is a good question. I just, realistically, is it a great value play? Probably not. I think he's a little older, a little more expensive than you would like for what he's going to probably give you on the court. But I don't know if the Suns are thinking about it that way. They might just be thinking, you know, this is the asset we have. That's the guy we want. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, I could see something like that. And if they do, six makes a lot of sense. I think really only Tyler Johnson with the sixth pick. I think maybe Josh Jackson too. I think maybe those three pieces together makes a lot of sense for Mike Conley.
Yeah, six would be the sole piece, and that kind of helps balance the value out a little bit, I think. But I agree with you. It is high, but at the same time, this draft, like we just went through all the guys and how there's big questions about each of them. I don't know if I'm too upset about moving that. You know, I think that this draft kind of changes things for me. If it's 2018 and that's Wendell Carter, okay, I'm really thinking a lot harder about it. But if it's going to be, you know, Kobe White, I don't feel too sad about moving that if I'm the Suns.
No, I agree with you there. And there's one scenario. I actually checked this with Jeff Siegel last night and also David Nash, just see if it's actually legal or not. But I have the Suns in this scenario getting both Aaron Gordon and Mike Conley. And hear me out. I know people probably think I'm crazy. But doing that trade that I suggested with Gordon, doing Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, the sixth pick for the 16th and Gordon, what if you then got Gordon, but then you also package a 16th pick plus Tyler Johnson, plus either a Kobe or Melton in the Bucks pick for Memphis to get Conley, and you get both Conley and Gordon? That's probably a 1% chance of happening, but at least from what I've been told, it is actually a legal transaction.
Yeah, sure. I think that evens the value out, definitely. I think trading 16 for Conley is a lot more in line with probably what he's worth, especially because the team most connected to him, the couple teams most connected to him, Utah and Indiana, are picking 18 and 23. So now you're kind of just enough ahead of them where you maybe can pry him away, but also you're not giving up more than you'd like to at six. So I, of course, think that makes a lot of sense, but makes a lot of sense, like reading it to me on a podcast, makes a lot of sense for a rookie general manager in his first draft night who seems to just hate trades for some reason. I don't know. It would be James Jones would be the talk of the NBA for a few nights at least if he pulled that off. He'd be like a Kevin Costner in draft day.
No, yeah, that would literally be having to be James Jones being 10, 20 steps ahead, thinking this out and being the most forward-thinking GM out there. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it's just a scenario that people should watch out for because did you by chance see James Jones in like that 60-second clip on the Suns Twitter account last night talking after the pick?
I did not. What did he say?
He pretty much, I mean, as we know with James, he's usually vague with us with the media. He was vague with the Suns as far as the question they asked him, but he didn't mention one single time. I know Rob Pelinka mentioned this, the Knicks GM mentioned this, how they still felt they would be able to get a top talent at 4 or 3 if they kept their pick. James Jones never once said in his interview or his 60-second clip that they still felt they could get a guy at 6. He didn't. He quote unquote said, "I feel like we still have the number one pick because of the young core we currently have." And he mentioned DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Josh Jackson, T.J. Warren. For some reason, didn't mention Kelly Oubre there, but it seems like he's focusing more on those guys. And after falling from 3 to 6, it just seems like James Jones is ready to just get off this pick immediately.
Yeah, I agree, and that's what I'm going to write about today. Is I think, I mean, obviously, one changes everything for you, but let's say the 86% likelihood was that this pick was never going to matter. I really feel like reading the tea leaves. You know, I've kind of been hinting at me feeling this way for a little while in the pod. People have been saying, you know, 1, 2 or trade the pick. I've really been in the 1 or trade the pick camp for a while, not only because I don't really love Ja quite as much as picking him 2nd and trying to build him up here in Phoenix when they're trying to kind of turn things around, but also just because I don't know if James Jones really ever wanted to do that. So I, for better or worse, I think this core is the one that is going to make or break the Suns for the next few years. And I think, you know, the 6th pick solidifies that, but that might have been true before last night. Maybe before we get out of here, what percent chance would you give Drew Holiday of being an even on the board for possibly being traded?
Less than 5%. I think before they got Zion, I think it was around 35-40%. But now with Zion, I mean, if you're David Griffin and Anthony Davis stays, I want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, is Zion, Drew, and AD a top 5 team in the West next year?
If they are able to keep AD even just for 1 year and they say, here's the deal, we think we can make you happy, we'll trade you for pennies on the dollar next February if you're just pissed and angry and you can't handle this city and this team anymore. But we're going to try to make it work for the next 9 months and see what happens. Even if we just get 2/3 of a season with those two guys, I'm going to be glued to my TV watching the Pelicans every night. I mean, I don't know what their ceiling is. I don't know. So much goes into that about, you know, what's Zion going to look like as a rookie? Is unhappy AD still the MVP candidate we saw when he's playing with Boogie and having a bunch of fun? Who knows? But holy crap, could that team be fun? And if they really get him to commit, yeah, I don't think it's a stretch to wonder how they can stack up to the rest of the league. I think Zion's a guy who's going to be able to play right away and make a big impact right away, and they already have 2 all-stars. So quickly, that Pelicans team went from laughingstock to holy crap, right? That's pretty wild. I mean, that's obviously the biggest takeaway from last night.
Literally, I mean, the more I think about it, Brendan, if you want to put a front court, like make a front court in a lab, just with boost all the ratings up, AD and Zion together, like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I really hope we get to see it. I hope that we get to see some fun teams around Zion early in his career. And obviously, Anthony Davis is not even close. He's the best possible option there. And so I'm rooting for it. And I think I just want to see Anthony Davis play basketball again. And getting to see him do it with a guy like Zion is good as well, because him heading to LA in that crappy situation, or New York and trying to revitalize the Knicks, I think I would prefer seeing him next to Zion over either one of those situations. So that's what my fingers are crossed for.
Really quickly, I know some Suns fans suggest this to me on my Twitter, so I just want to get your quick thoughts on this. I know you're probably not a fan of the idea, but since I saw a report about the Bulls possibly being interested in him, would you trade number 6 overall for Lonzo Ball and give them any ammunition to trade for AD so you can give them the 6th pick for Lonzo Ball?
I think every day that Lonzo is not on the court with that ankle injury makes me want him less and less. So I think 6 is high for Conley. I think 6 is also high for Lonzo Ball. But my stance on that might change. Obviously, this is spur-of-the-moment reaction, but Lonzo scares me. The lack of growth on offense that we've seen from him combined with that injury, not as exciting a prospect as he was when we were just talking about 2017 draft night.
Yeah, that's for sure. You'd really be betting on Lonzo being a transcendent guy. And I know the Suns have written number 1 on their board in 2017, but obviously a lot's changed since then. But anything else you want to cover on today's pod, Brent?
No, we have a month to dig into all of it, and I'll be in Chicago this week, so hopefully we can get, if I can't get a guest, obviously we'll be doing some pods reacting to the stuff that I see and hear over there this week. So definitely stay tuned. I hope you guys are excited to at least go through this insane process with us, if it didn't turn out quite the way we all hoped.
Yeah, Brennan's going to be in Chicago, like you said, for Locked On. So he's going to be bringing us some really cool stuff the next couple of days, what he sees in person. So we're definitely going to hit on that throughout the week. Appreciate everyone listening in. As always, unfortunately, the lottery did not go the Suns' way. We'll be back to you guys on Friday for our next episode.